The recording has started, madam.
Thank you. Jeff, I'll do the roll call. We have on the call Jeff Newman, who is the chair of the group, Bertrand de la Chapelle from the GAC, David Maher, Registry Constituency, Alan Greenberg, ALAC, James Bladel, Registrar, and Paul Dias, Registrar as well. For staff, we have Liz Gaster, Marjorie Malam, and Marika Koenigs, and myself, Glenda Saint-Gervais. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Everyone, welcome to the PDP work team call on April 30th, I believe is today's date.
Sorry, Jeff, excuse me just one moment. We have excuses from who can't be on the call, Liz Williams and Wolf Ulrich Knoben. And we have Gabriel Pinero from the NCUC on the Adobe Connect only.
Okay. All right, so again, welcome to the PDP work team call on April 30th. So Glenn, let me just take a roll. So we don't have anyone at this point from the IP constituency, the business constituency, the ISP constituency, or non-commercial, although we have Gabrielle on Adobe, but not on.
Hello, here is Binaclad speaking. I'm from IP constituency. I just joined the call.
And Jeff, it's Marilyn. Although I'm here as an individual, I am a member of the BC.
Okay, good. Glenn, you have them on your list as well?
Yes, I have. Thank you, Jeff. And we're just missing the ISP. And Wolf Ulrich did say in his note that he would ask somebody from the ISP to be on the call, but we have, at this moment, nobody yet.
Okay. So for everyone that's on the call, it sounds like we have a lot more people on the call than we do on the Adobe Connect. So if you are in front of a computer and can find the invitation, and I think Glenn just resent it out as well, the Adobe link, so that we can see who's on and we can we're gonna have some documents shown on the computer. So if you could view that would be great. Okay, so where we left off, we did have a call last week. Unfortunately, we had to cut it pretty short because we only had about four participants. That's not including the ICANN staff members that were there. So we really couldn't get much accomplished last week, so we decided to just postpone it to this week and then set up a regular schedule for Thursday calls at this time every week, understanding that one or two of them may conflict with a GNSO council meeting, and if they do, then we'll have to figure out other times for those meetings. So that's it on the logistics. We have a lot to do in a short period of time before Sydney. And one of the agenda items, what we'll do is we'll continue where we left off two calls ago on subject A, planning and initiation of a PDP. Then I want to spend a little time talking about logistics for Sydney to find out, you know, just get a poll as to when people are planning on coming in to see if we can schedule a full group meeting there. And just writing that down here. And I think that's it. Any other items to add to the agenda?
Jeff, it's Alan. I wouldn't mind a report from staff as if there's any change or predicted change in the Sydney implementation for the new GNSO or not, just to give us a point of reference.
Okay.
I'm sure this is Margie. I can comment. There is no delay at this point, although it's looking less and less likely that we'll have the new council seated in June.
There's no delay, but there's also no bylaws.
Yeah, there's no official delay. We have a call scheduled on Tuesday with the restructuring team to go over the bylaws, but I just don't see how that's going to all get done by June.
I believe, given 30-day comment periods, at this point it's impossible. I think.
So, on that note, Mark, I know this is on the subject. I know the board, I'm assuming it was on the agenda for the board meeting that was last week. Do you know if there were, can you give us kind of a rundown, or can someone give us a rundown of what the board discussed on this subject?
Actually, Liz, you attended that call. Why don't you comment on that?
I'm sorry, I stepped away for just one sec. Can you repeat it?
Sure. I know that this subject, JNSO improvements, was on the board agenda for last on the 23rd. So can you give us kind of a flavor of what was discussed as far as timing, possible delay, what their thinking is?
There was discussion of delay, but there was no conclusion at that time. So there's a placeholder to reevaluate whether delay will be necessary, but they were not prepared to make that call on the call.
Okay.
There was also substantive discussion about the pending issues before them, but again, no conclusions.
And were any of those pending? Were any of those discussions on the PDP itself, or was it mostly on structure?
Yeah, it was just on structure.
Okay. Alan, do you have any other follow-up questions on that, or is that pretty much?
Nothing that needs to be said right now.
Very politically well said.
No, there's one other issue on the interim bylaws, but I don't think we really care at this point. So.
Okay. So with that said, let's because I know people will probably have to drop off, and it seems like, you know, at the beginning of the call we probably have the most amount of people. Can we take kind of a poll on who's going to be in Sydney and when you think you're going to arrive, so I can, you know, usually we reserve Saturday and Sunday for GNSO type meetings. And so if you could just kind of, if you're on Adobe, well, not everyone's on Adobe. I'm looking at the list. Can we just go down the list just to ask everyone when they're going to get in?
Can I do that, Jeff? Yes.
Thank you.
David Maher?
I will be there on Saturday.
James Bladell?
Be arriving Saturday, June 20th, at approximately 8 a.m.
Paul Diaz?
I will not be in Sydney.
Jean-Christophe Ignat? Jean-Christophe is on Adobe Connect. I don't know if he can hear me. Alan Greenberg?
I'll be arriving no later than Friday, and my preference, if because of other conflicts, is if we can have a meeting on Saturday, that would be preferable to me.
Alan, can you, what other conflicts? I haven't seen any.
I have ALAC meetings on Sunday.
Okay, good.
So,
thanks.
I mean, I may skip them, but if we do it on Saturday, I have no conflict.
Okay.
Gabriel Pinheiro is on the Adobe Connect. Can you hear me? Okay.
Glenn, this is Margie. I've been corresponding with Glenn on Gabrielle on chat. He just can't call in right now, so.
That's all right. Okay, thank you. Spinek Lebu?
Yes, I plan to come to Sydney, and I plan to come on Sunday, but I still can reschedule if it is necessary.
Marilyn?
I'm planning to arrive Friday at the latest in the morning on Saturday.
Thank you. And that is all that we have on the list. Have I missed anybody?
Yeah, Bertrand.
Oh, Bertrand, excuse.
Never mind. I'll be arriving probably on Friday, and the problem is that we have a full day Saturday and Sunday GAC meetings, the most important being on Saturday. So my preference, as far as I'm concerned, is on the morning on Sunday, if people agree. But
thank you very much. Have I missed anybody else? And Jeff, yourself?
I'll get there Saturday morning, probably, like James said, probably around 8 a.m. or so.
Okay. So I think we've covered everybody that's on the call.
Okay, great. I appreciate taking a couple minutes to do that, because usually when we do it on email, it takes not everyone answers, so this one kind of put everyone on the spot. So thank you very much. And Glenn, actually, if we could send a follow-up email to the list to find out when everyone's coming in so we can schedule a meeting?
I'll do that, Jeff. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Great. So let's then jump in. On two calls ago, we started going through topic A, and I think we had a really fruitful discussion. We got through all of number one on the chart for those of you that are on Adobe, which is the raising an issue. And then we talked and we got probably halfway through number two, which is the creation of the issues report. The notes are that were drafted by ICANN staff are on the right-hand column there, and I think they accurately capture what we discussed. Also, after the call, I will note that Bertrand had sent around a document, actually, I read, which was pretty good, by Thomas Narton on considerations for having a successful Birds of Feather session. It's an RFC, informational RFC number 5434. And for those of you that have not read it, I actually encourage you to read it because I think they do have some pretty good ideas on initial sessions prior to the creation of a working group, and actually goes through a number of items, including whether deciding, you know, there are a number of reasons for having the Birds of a Feather, and some of them are not intended to result in the formation of a working group, but still have considerable value to the community. And I think it also goes through things like timelines and informal steps. Nothing, you know, not that all of this needs to be in a formal PDP process, but gives some good guidance as steps that should be taken, even informally, to raise an issue. So, Bertrand, thank you for sending that around. And, you know, it occurred to me, obviously, because Thomas Darton is involved in the ICANN world to a great extent,
mm-hmm.
as to whether people might think for the next call whether it would be useful to invite him to discuss this Birds of a Feather and see if that might help to include other things in our paper.
Jeff, it's Marilyn. I'm not able to be on Adobe. Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Could I just ask you, first of all, to repeat the RFC number?
Sure. It's 5434.
Okay. My second question is, while I would welcome that, I'd like to also hear perhaps from W3C or another group. The IETF is a unique, very technically oriented environment that often purposely does not deal with policy issues. It's a greatly valued forum, but I think we might want to maybe consider hearing as well from another group or two that actually may have to go through similar processes, but may have end up having more of a policy focus to what they end up working on, just to get some compare and contrast.
Okay, you had mentioned the W3C. Is there any others that you can think of?
There are others. Let me send a couple of emails. Some of the others are a little more, they're not as broadly inclusive in terms of the stakeholders, so I'm hesitant to necessarily rely on groups that don't have a broad inclusion of multiple stakeholders. Let me send a couple of emails.
Okay. So with the W3C, I know Thomas Roessler is a part of that. Is he someone that we think we could invite for the next call?
You know, Thomas, it's Marilyn again. I would support that. Thomas has a broad experience in working at ICANN in its various stages of evolution, as well as now, you know, kind of an extensive experience at W3C.
Hey, Jeff, it's Liz. Can I jump in?
Sure.
Thomas has been also active in the working groups work team and has been sharing some of his expertise there in the context of working groups. So I think it would be pretty easy to reach out to him in this context, and staff would be glad to do that.
All right, if you could, James, do you have a mic? I don't know if that was a hands up or
Yeah, it was a hand up, and then it converted to a mic.
Okay.
And I just wanted to agree that there's value in bringing in some of these other perspectives, but in the interest of our short schedule, just wanted to possibly recommend an alternative that they that these folks be asked to maybe put together some notes, and then those could be published to the list rather than, and that would allow us to conserve call time.
Actually, I'm going to get back in the queue. You know, it's Marilyn. The reason I probably am going to push back a little bit on that is understanding how really busy everybody is. I think it may be an imposition on people to ask them to do a written document.
Mm-hmm. So what I might add is we have the document from the IETF, which is actually relatively short. It is 13 pages, but a lot of it is pretty big font and. It's a pretty quick read. That's for the IETF, and we will, Liz, if you can ask, when you send a note to Thomas Russler, if you can ask if they have a similar type of document that may go through those types of provisions, then or these types of subjects, then if you could forward that out to the list before the call, then that might give us ideas for questions to ask during the call. So it looks like Alan has got a question as well.
Yeah, I guess I'm bothered by what sounds like an attempt to enforce detailed process, where I think we should be focusing on what we're trying to achieve by a birds of a feather meeting or consultation, and set the targets as what we're trying to get out of it, not the step-by-step process, because we're dealing with such a wide variety of issues from a very wide set of origins that I think it's really important to say what the substance is we're looking for, not a specific process.
Okay. Bertrand?
Yeah, just a few comments. The first thing is that the relevant document in the W3C, and I fully support Marilyn's comment, is called the process document. I will send the link on the list. It is a document that has had several iterations, and as far as I understand, the last one may date back to 2005. But the initial one, which is much simpler, was produced, I think, in 1999 or 98. And it's interesting to look at the way they present the formation of working groups and all that stuff, and I support Marilyn's comment that it's probably more product-oriented. The other point is that it would be good to have Thomas Russler and maybe Jonas Norton in the meeting in Sydney. I agree that it would be hard to ask them to actually produce something. And the last thing is that in the same mail that mentioned this birds of a feather resolution from the IETF or RFC from the IETF, I also attached, and I saw no specific comment, and maybe it's been overlooked, a proposed draft for the revision of the early parts of the Annex A, and so I just wanted to mention it to remind people that this was out, and we can discuss it later.
Okay, thank you, Bertrand. Actually, I apologize, I did miss that. It looked. I apologize. I missed that, and we'll have to go back and look at that.
Okay. So I thought as you answered that you were about to ask, you probably saw only the reference to the RFC and not the attached document.
Yeah. For some reason, I assumed that was just a copy. Copy of that. My mistake. I want to go back to Alan's comment that he was kind of concerned that. And if I don't mean to put words in your mouth, concerned that we were maybe trying to script too much process in kind of this informal nature, and that you're worried about kind of developing these formal rules when there could be so many different inputs into raising an issue.
Well, yes, I don't want to be in the extreme. I don't want to say we didn't follow the process because we had nothing called a birds of a feather. Even though effectively someone went through the same process. in the development of you know, raising the issue and raising consciousness on the issue. And I think it's the end product of such birds of a feather session or multiple such sessions that we're trying to describe, not necessarily the process itself. At least that's what I think we need to do.
Okay, does anyone have any comments on that, on Alan's point? So, Alan, is it possible, though, that part of our output, you know, aside from the obvious of recommending the formal process that, you know, in order to develop a policy, I mean, we also could make suggestions as to steps that could be taken to guide people to raise an issue.
Oh, indeed. I think that, you know, I guess I'd call that best practices, and we definitely want to give people options and processes that may address the needs, but I wouldn't want to say they are the sole ones.
Okay, I think that's fair. Any other comments on that? Okay. Let me jump then to does anyone have any comments on the notes in the last column from number one?
I have a more general comment. At a previous meeting, I was asked to put together some thoughts on what I thought the PDU process should look like. I didn't end up doing that, but I ended up doing a bit of a history and what I thought the criteria were for launching a PDP, and I did send that a few hours prior to the meeting of the 23rd. It probably came just a few hours before people went into that meeting or didn't go to the meeting, so you may or may not have seen it.
Okay, it's the email titled Comments on
PDP Process.
Okay. So I encourage everyone to read that. Alan, is there anything you wanted to call out from there, or just...
I did come to some conclusions, but there were specific conclusions on the on when to trigger the actual PDP, if we call it that. And we're not quite at that point in the discussion right now, so I don't think it needs to be discussed. I did go over a bit of the history and current practices, which I don't think are well understood by everyone, so it may be worth reading at some point for that.
Okay. I think that's good, and I think if we get to an area, as we're going to get into area two now, where it'll fit in, then we can kind of read from there. On number two, where we had gotten to was, and I want to kind of use Bertrand because I think this was his idea during the call, which was that, and Marilyn had talked about this to a great extent as well, on having this brief, before you actually have the actual, quote, issues report, the suggestion was to use kind of a briefing or scoping paper similar to what the OECD, similar to what's used by the OECD, that provides kind of an executive summary of research information obtained through educational workshops prior to creation of an issues report. And the early paper could cover, I think Bertrand had this comment, could cover what was A, B, and C in the original or the bylaws that currently exist. And then the council could make kind of a go, no-go decision for a more in-depth issues paper, which would be put out for public comment. And that would include things like D and E, D and E that are in the current issues report.
So, Jeff, that sounds like we are now talking about the process to get to an issues report initiated by council.
Correct.
There are two other kinds, but we're talking about the one that council has control over.
Right.
Okay.
That's correct. Because I'm not sure. Well, let me throw it in before I say that's right. I guess we haven't asked the question, although we kind of glossed over it. I think, let me throw it out to the group. There are three ways to raise an issue, as we discussed in the last call. That's through the board initiation of an issues report, where pretty much they just request an issues report, and that's it. It's done. Same thing with an advisory committee, whether that's the ALAC, the GAC, or any other advisory committee, that's the SAC. that those don't go through any kind of council process at this stage. Is there anyone that feels that like we should change that, modify it, ask some questions on it? Does anyone have any thoughts on the other two mechanisms for raising an issue? A board or an advisory committee?
Yeah, Jeff, it's Marilyn. Can I be in the queue?
Yep, absolutely. Anyone else that's on Adobe, if you could just raise your hand. Go ahead, Marilyn.
You know, I'm not suggesting that we want to create a barrier to the board or to an advisory committee calling for an issues report, but I think we still want to be sure that there's proper support to the development of an issues report. I am going to continue to reference the fact that informed policymaking has got to be our goal. And so maybe we should consider where in the process the same kind of support and rigor would be added to an issues report request that comes from the other two mechanisms. Again, not to be a barrier, but to figure out how the support gets applied.
And before I go to Bertrand, do you have any thoughts as to where that would fit in and how that support would be measured?
Well, if the board called for an issues report on something, and if it were not the board acting in the urgent category, right? That is, the board has detected some frailty that is going to threaten the security or stability of the organization or the DNS. If it's the board has received 10,000 email complaints about something, and their response is to request an issues report, I would assume that we would still expect to have a well-researched and well-supported set of materials that would be incorporated in the issues report. But if we're going to keep the time frame that we have right now for the development of the issues report, we're really shortchanging the depth of research or the rigor that can go into the research. So I don't have an answer, but I think maybe after we walk through the more the council oriented process, perhaps we can then figure out where we would plug in the other two categories would fit.
Okay, I have Bertrand and then Alan.
Yeah, what we're addressing at the moment is actually the preparation phase before the effective launch of the full PDP, the creation of a working group, and so on. In this preparation phase, we've agreed that we don't change the three possible initiations. And what I understood from the previous discussions is that we have actually a beginning of this preparation phase and an end. And the goal is to make sure that there are no barriers to enter issues as early as they should be treated. And in this respect, having informal birds of a feather before is a nice way to nurture and argument in favor of a request. But the three elements of the initiation of this preparation should bring the staff to produce what could be called an issues paper, not an issues report, something that would be very light and that would have three elements: the proposed issue raised for consideration, the identity of the parties submitting the issue and the reasons invoked for submitting the issue, and a very brief discussion of presentation of the main dimensions of the issue at that stage. The end part of the preparation would be what is called today in the bylaws the staff recommendation on whether to go further and to launch a formal PDP. And this could include the opinion of the General Counsel on whether the issue is within the scope and the expected PDP outcome, whether the expected PDP outcome is broadly applicable, etc., which are the, some of the criteria already in the bylaw. And the second element in the staff recommendation could be the degree of support for launching a PDP on this issue. And the third element would be the expected outcome of the PDP and the main points and issues to address. Between those two phases, the council, the GNSO council, could decide during this preparatory process to extend the time and to request, as needed, additional research on some of all other dimensions of the issue. And the idea is that we have a flexible mechanism that can have a very quick agreement on the initiation of a PDP if there is very broad understanding that something is urgent, that there is agreement on what has to be done. And if something is much more delicate, something that is not that urgent and that requires much more in-depth, we have a longer preparation phase that guarantees that when the PDP is actually launched, the real elements are clear for everybody before we discuss. So I just recirculated on the list the formulations that I had drafted according to this, and I hope these three elements make sense, like the issues paper, very succinct at first, a staff recommendation at the end of the preparation phase, and in between, potential additional research if needed.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that. And I do have your paper up, and you do go into that detail. Alan?
Yeah, we've now wandered right into the middle of what I was talked about in my note. What I did is try to understand what are the criteria that the council should apply for launching a PDP. Because we've gone around many times of, should we launch a PDP if we don't have all of the studies done and all of the information in?
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the conclusion that there's two criteria. One is it clear that that policy is needed? Not necessarily consensus policy, but is it clear that policy must be developed to address this issue? Number two, do we believe there is a likelihood that it will be possible to do this? Because sometimes you need more information to simply understand the problem. Sometimes the information is to help you, address what the final answer is. And if council believes that policy is needed and there is a likelihood that we will be able to succeed in developing such a policy, then I believe there should be no barrier to launching the PDP. And I think council needs a flexible set of tools prior to making that decision to enable it to come to that decision. Once it comes to that decision, one launches the formal development process, and that also has a large set of tools which it can draw upon to do it, to do the actual work.
Can you, this is Jeff, can you go into again, you said, do you believe it's possible to do this or that it's, can you just explain that success element a little more?
I guess if you look at the ones that haven't been particularly successful, that covers it sort of. Who is? We went into it because we believed we needed something without any really real understanding of whether it is going to be possible to come up with an answer. Now, this is a prediction issue, not a guarantee. Fast flux also, I think, is one of those that there seems to have been a lack of real understanding of what we're trying to get out of the PDP before we went into it. And other things are, in other issues, it is moderately clear going into it that we have a problem, we have a behavior that's going on that we want to stop, or that we want to start, or something, and we need to go into a policy development process. If you look at the domain tasting one that you were involved in, we went into that knowing there was something we wanted to fix. I don't think we had a strong, good idea of how we were going to do it, As a matter of fact, if you go back through all the discussions, we changed radically in what we planned to do. We didn't know the answer, but we knew there was a problem we had to fix, and there was a conviction that we will be able to come to a meeting of the minds and find some ground that will be acceptable to most parties.
So in that Birds of a Feather group that we had for domain tasting, I would say this is where I'm a little trying to think about your second element. I think there was a good idea by a number of participants of what the solution was, or at least what they believed the solution should be, and it was very ultimately that was turned around and changed, but that was a very difficult process. Because people were convinced what the solution, initially going in as to what the solution was.
The domain tasting is probably not the best one to use as a model, because in fact we had two parallel groups going. One, a backroom group that no one talked about, and a formal process going on in parallel with some overlap in participants, but not all. So that one was is a weird bird, to use the bird expression again.
So help me understand then how, with your second criteria, well, let me go back. Your first criteria, is it clear that new policy is needed to address the issue? And again, you're not necessarily referring to consensus policy, it's just policy, and then you kind of worry about later on whether it's consensus policy or not.
It may be consensus policy, it may be recommendation to ICANN staff, it may be... You know, there's any number of forms that a policy direction from the council can take.
Right. And can't we merge that element, though, with what Bertrand was suggesting? In order to know whether it's clear or not that new policy is needed, if you kind of merge that idea with Bertrand's first three elements, and then I'll go to Bertrand, the first three elements that he had mentioned, which are... an issues paper that at least has the proposed issue raised for consideration, the identity of the party submitting the issue, the main dimensions of the issue.
Well, I think that issues paper, or whatever we're calling it, is in fact the main document that we're looking at, and just like right now, it makes a recommendation based on the cursory review that was given, whether this is ready for prime time, whether it needs a lot more work to understand it, because when the issues paper was requested, things were not well defined and well scoped. So it's going to depend on, I mean, that issues report is indeed the first document that will help us decide whether we're ready for this or not.
Okay, let me, Marilyn, let me go to Bertrand because he had his hand up in the queue.
Sure.
I'll go to you.
Sure.
Okay, Bertrand.
Yeah, briefly to respond to your question and regarding Alan's comment, which I share, I would slightly reformulate it to connect with what I was saying. The first question is, do we understand the issue correctly? And that is the purpose of the so-called, would be the purpose of the very initial, very briefly, could be three pages, issue paper produced by the staff upon request. And it would just highlight the main dimensions and maybe mention whether apparently some additional information is needed or not. The second question that Alan asked, which was his first, is it clear that a policy is needed? And I would make a compliment saying, is it the right tool? What kind of policy? Is it a recommendation? Is it a consensus policy? And so on. This is typically the purpose of the later stage staff recommendation that is sent back to the council for decision to launch or not. In between, the will it be possible to do this is about additional information if there is a thinking that there's no agreement on what the issue is or what the goal is or on what the nature of the outcome should be, what type of policy there is. So I'm fully in line with what Alan was saying with three elements instead of his two. The first one is, are the dimensions of the issues correctly understood? This is the issue paper. The end is the staff recommendation of, is a policy needed and what is the right type of tool we need? And in between, is it possible to do this or do we need additional information?
Just point of clarification, are you suggesting that we have an issues paper and an issues report, that there be two staff documents produced in this overall process?
No, actually, I would replace the term issues report that is currently mentioned by this very light issues paper, 3 pages with the basic elements for discussion in the community. And then issues reports or additional research paper or background documents and so on, whatever you call them, could be requested in as much as is needed. But the two basic documents are initially an issues paper, and in the end, the staff recommendation. And in between, other types of reports could be prepared either by the staff or independent consultants or some members of the community, but to nurture the discussion.
But the staff recommendation is, in fact, then a good part of what the current issues report is.
Probably.
Okay, so we are talking about a two-step process with staff involved twice.
Yes.
Okay, let me go to Marilyn, and then I have a question as well. So, Marilyn?
You know, I think actually in our last call we talked a little bit about anything that was done in the preliminary document would be incorporated into, obviously, and absorbed in a larger document. Maybe the other thing we need to think about is building in flexibility. So a normal process would have what I would call a stage zero and then a stage one, but an accelerated process might combine the two. And I think we do need to be flexible, but again, think about how we are building in the ability to adequately research and support and inform a decision-making process that has to then be undertaken by the council. We haven't talked about this, but we're going to need to at some point, and that is, let's say that, so I just want to park this idea to come back to. Let's say that the issues report or reports or the two stages are done, and the council rejects the idea of a PDP, but the community feels very strongly, some parts of the community feel very strongly that further work is needed, even if it's not policy work. And I think the question then remains is, where does that work get sent? Right now, we seem to be able to accommodate that by having awareness or educational sessions that can go on parallel and that are very useful and needed. But maybe that's the other question for us to ask ourselves is, what if the issues report does not recommend a policy development process? Is it able to recommend something else?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just writing this down, taking notes. And that would go after the council vote, which we're not quite there yet, but I've written that down to get back to that issue. So whatever we call this, and Bertrand called it kind of the staff recommendation document, do we know what elements we think should be in there aside from the ones that are currently in the PDP? And so let me read those. Right now it says that there needs to be a recommendation. This is in the current PDP, not in the proposed one, but the current one says there needs to be a recommendation from the staff manager as to whether the council should initiate the PDP for this issue. That's called a staff recommendation. Each staff recommendation shall include the opinion of the ICANN General Counsel regarding whether the issue proposed to initiate the PDP is properly within the scope of the ICANN policy process and within the scope of the GNSO. Determining whether the issue is properly within the scope of the ICANN policy process, the General Counsel shall examine whether such issue, one, is within the scope of the ICANN mission statement, two, is broadly applicable to multiple situations or organizations, three, is likely to have lasting value or applicability, albeit with the need for occasional updates, four, will establish a guide framework for future decision-making Or five, implements or affects an existing ICANN policy. What do people think of those five items? Should there be more? Should there be less? Do we need clarification? I mean, I'll tell you from experience, when the general counsel weighs in, sometimes people understand what the general counsel is saying, sometimes not so much. What do you all think of that process? What should be changed, or should anything be changed?
I think what's outlined there is reasonable. Whether it needs tweaking or not, I'm not sure. One of the problems in the past has been the lack of understanding of the term in scope. And I'm one of the ones who has been guilty, because just like ICANN uses the term constituency and consensus in multiple different ways, we use the term in scope in multiple different ways. And we need to make sure that whatever we end up coming out of this is clear enough that people can actually know what we're talking about. Now, maybe we need to invent different words, or maybe we need to qualify them by the time we finish. But other than that, I think the overall description is reasonable if I'm interpreting it the proper way.
Okay, and I think that's right as far as scope. What do you think we can do to make some recommendations on how they can make it more clear?
Well, it's too late to go back and change the words that ICANN uses universally all over the place and pick different ones now. Maybe it comes back to this, simply a good set of definitions of these words and identifying the different ways that they're used in different forms.
Okay. Well, could one suggest a change, or not change, but clarification, be that, you know, when you say it's within scope, clarify that that does not necessarily mean it's a consensus policy. Like, in scope, people understand, don't get into an argument of whether something's in or out of scope. One thing you can clarify is, even if it doesn't rise to the level of a consensus policy or within the scope of that picket fence, it could still be within the scope of ICANN or the GNSO's mandate.
Exactly. It's just that hasn't been crystal clear to people many of the times, and I think we need to make sure, whether it's by sets of definitions or trying to use slightly different words or adjectives modifying them, that we in our final document we make it clear. I think we understand right now. It's just to make sure that there's not going to be a misunderstanding of the words that get cast in concrete afterwards.
Is that Margie?
It was Liz, but I thought, I should raise my hand.
Okay, so let me go to Margie, and then I'll go to Liz, and then Bertrand.
Well, Margie will say what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions about how to involve the legal counsel in this topic, and you're exactly right. That the initial inquiry is really whether it's within, you know, ICANN's mission, because they just don't know early on what we're going to end up with in the GNSO, process. And so one of the suggestions that we've been tossing around internally is whether we want to take out the recommendation where we get an opinion of the legal counsel, but just, you know, have more of a staff recommendation. And then we bring in the legal counsel later on when we know what's the outcome of the process. In other words, whether it is meant to be a consensus policy or an enforceable policy or something like that.
I'm going to get in the queue on that.
Okay, so let me go to Bertrand, and then I'll go to you, Marilyn.
Wasn't that Margie? No?
Yeah, that was Margie, and then I'm going to go to Bertrand, because
okay.
Liz said that her comment was the same. I'll go to Bertrand, and then Marilyn.
Okay, just one point. I think the current wording is okay in spirit, but it can be more concise, because it's pretty lengthy for something that is in the bylaws. The proposal that I've circulated is to formulate it this way, that the staff recommendation would contain the opinion, A, the opinion of the General Counsel on whether, first point, the issue is within the scope of ICANN's mandate and the scope of the GNA. And two, the expected PDP outcome is broadly applicable with lasting value and affecting an existing ICANN policy. This more or less covers the different points in a more compact format. The second point, beyond the opinion of the General Counsel, would be to have the staff recommendation indicating the degree of support for launching a PDP on that issue, and C, the expected outcome of the PDP and the main issues to address. The expression, the expected outcome of the PDP, would be exactly to determine whether it is a consensus policy, a recommendation, or a full policy. Just one point regarding, final point regarding the question of scope. I don't think it is actually in the annex of the bylaws regarding the PDP that this should be addressed. The ideal thing is to make sure that the scope of the GNSO and the ICANN's mandate in general are clear in the other parts of the bylaws, and maybe we should have a clearer look at the part of the bylaws that describe the GNSO Council regarding what its exact mandate and scope of activity is. Probably not here.
Okay, let me go to Marilyn and then Alan.
I really strongly urge that we demand and require legal review and involvement all along and not after the fact, because I really think that we are shortchanging the policy development process by withholding the legal involvement from the beginning. I was a counselor for a very long period of time, and not to put too fine a point on it, the experts on the, there were very limited staff, but the experts on the bylaws were named Bruce Tonkin and Marilyn Cade. And, you know, we've gone far beyond that, but even if members of the council are experts on the bylaws, there's still a legal review and accountability issue. So I think there have to be points of review and consultation, and there will be times when the council does not agree with the legal interpretation, and as we did in the past, there must be the ability for the council to take into account the legal opinion and to override that legal opinion based on the findings and the responsibility of the council. They still need to be advised by the legal counsel on what the implications are of their doing that. The council may need to take a look at, you know, really kind of thinking about what additional legal resources need to be provided. I'm not saying that has to be from the general counsel's office, but there has to be an understanding that there is a legal review built in along the way.
Okay.
Jeff, can I comment?
On that particular point?
Yes, yeah. What I was suggesting is not that legal counsel isn't involved. It's behind the scenes, if you will. In other words, if staff's making the recommendation that it's within ICANN's scope, it's only because we've talked to legal counsel, but we don't have to have a formal opinion in the sense that we have now.
Marju, with all due respect, there have to be built-in checks and balances. So if that means that the policy staff presents a statement that they have reviewed with legal counsel and this is the finding of the legal counsel, I still would say that that has to be documented.
So let me also kind of jump in, and then I'm going to go to Alan because he's got his hand raised. I will note that something I observed, and this goes back to the Feb 06 PDP, one of the issues in that one was that the general counsel was very unclear as to the recommendation, and a lot of work was being done, and unfortunately there was a belief that
whatever was developed by the council or the working group or whatever we had for that, that was going to be binding on the registries, the existing registries, and a lot of work went into it with that kind of understanding. The general counsel did not offer a clear opinion one way or the other during the entire process, and then I think a lot of people that actually worked pretty hard were very disappointed after the process when it was made clear that some of that may not be, quote, within the scope of something you can, of a consensus policy. And I think that caused a lot of frustration amongst people in the community, not just the registry operators, but, you know, amongst everyone who participated in this group, because it was so unclear. And I think the community wants to avoid that type of thing in the future. And if that only means, you know, an opinion from the general counsel stating, yes, it's within the mandate of ICANN, we're not sure yet that it would fall into consensus policy because we haven't seen the recommendations, but providing some guidelines so that when the group is working, they understand what, or have some objective way to determine whether something is or not within the picket fence, for example. I think that's extremely valuable and necessary. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of people that are just going to lose faith in the entire process. So with that said, let me turn it over to Alan.
Yeah, I mean, before I make my comments I was going to make, I think what you're describing is making sure we set expectations and make it clear that what we're aiming at is going to be in what you were describing, a consensus policy which is effectively binding once council approves it with a sufficient majority, or is simply a recommendation to the board or staff, which is not binding at all. Because those are really the only tools the council has. Now, Bertrand made the comment that what we have right now is too many words and too complex for the bylaws. I don't think anyone has made a decision or even had a discussion right now of whether this whole thing should still be in the bylaws or not. So I think that part is somewhat up for grabs. As you mentioned right now, if it is legal counsel's and staff in conjunction with legal counsel's opinion that something is within the scope of ICANN but not within the scope of the GNSO, that's why we currently have a different voting threshold. If you look at it, if the GNSO starts on a PDP which is deemed out of scope for the GNSO, it has a higher threshold to initiate. It doesn't have a higher threshold to approve. Once it gets started, it's a PDP like any other PDP. But we do have the two different levels of the amount of support that you need to initiate a PDP that's deemed to be within scope is relatively low. That means you do have to get some other people in the community to agree with you. And lastly, in terms of defining the expected outcomes before it's initiated, I would strongly say that's not the right answer. The whole process of developing policy, the group is going to end up having a lot of discussion and probably getting a lot of more input as to the details of what the issue is and how to fix it. And I don't think you want to rule out at the beginning that the outcome is only going to be consensus policy when it becomes obvious along the process that some other type of outcome is also needed in addition to or instead of. So I would caution us to casting things in concrete early before we've had the substantive policy development activity to begin with.
Okay, can I ask just for clarification, you said that if it's within the scope of ICANN but not within the GNSO, then that's subject to the higher threshold. And maybe it's a question for Liz, is the document that specific, or does it just say if it's determined out of scope? So in theory, council says it's out of scope of ICANN completely. I think the council could still override. I think that threshold still applies. Is that true, Liz, or did I misinterpret that?
Let me answer my thought first. I don't think it's untrue, but council would be rather foolish to spend a lot of time developing policy which has already been stated is outside of ICANN's scope altogether.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that statement, but just to clarify.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to get my two cents in. But
so the question is, when we say out of scope, do we mean both out of scope for GNSO and out of scope for ICANN? Is that and I think it's sort of a two-step analysis that we actually go through. It's actually a multi-step analysis that we go through. But I think in terms of the threshold, it would apply to either case.
Either one.
Well, I think that's an element we can discuss.
Mm-hmm. And clarify in the future.
Let me have
an additional. She's been doing some work to try to look at how that's expressed well and how to express it more clearly. And she may have a clear sense.
So I'll ask, okay, Margie, do you have anything to add on that?
I think I agree with Liz that it's two-prong analysis, whether it's outside of ICANN scope and the GNSO scope.
So but the threshold as the board is approved was recommended by the working group of members of the council and others, was just used the term out of scope. It didn't define it any further. So let me throw it out to the group and maybe some people that haven't necessarily weighed in much. We could go either way on this. We could say that if either of those two prongs are determined out of scope, then the council would have that higher threshold. Or we could say that if the council determines outside the scope of ICANN completely, then it doesn't matter if you have the threshold. It shouldn't be addressed at all. Or we could do something else. So let me throw that out to the group and see what thoughts are. Alan, I don't know if that's a newly raised hand or the old one.
No, that's the old one.
That's the old one, okay.
I think I still, at one point I still had an old microphone too.
I think I took those off. So does anyone have any thoughts on how we can further clarify, should we further clarify the definition that the working group put into place, the board approved? If so, how? And what are your thoughts?
And just so you know, my hand is up because I want to respond a little more to Marilyn at the appropriate time on that other thread.
Oh, okay. And Margie, your hand is up to answer.
Yeah, actually, after you explained the various options, I think I'm wrong. I think what I said earlier was wrong. My understanding, I think, is that if it's out of GNSO scope, then it's higher threshold. In other words, just, you know, GNSO scope meaning GTLDs, and if we've got a recommendation on something else, SAC or whatever, CCNSO or something that's not, you know, related to GTLDs, that's the higher one. It's not the overall ICANN scope question.
But I guess a subset of out of the scope of GNSO is out of the scope of ICANN completely, right?
No.
You could, in theory, say it's out of the scope of the GNSO, or if you say it's out of the scope of ICANN, it's also out of the scope of the GNSO, right? I mean, that's not
deciding to develop IPv9 is probably not an ICANN issue or a GNSO issue.
I want to be in the queue.
Yes. So let me go to Marilyn.
I just want to back us up for a minute. The GNSO's charter is to develop policies related to generic top-level domains, but there are obviously evolving interactions that implicate policy that may be developed by the two other existing SOs with policy-making authority, CCNSO and ASO. ASO within ICANN is largely a coordinating entity. So while it clearly would be out of the GNSO's scope of competency and responsibility to develop IPv9, it might not be out of the GNSO Policy Council's area to call for policy to be examined and proposed by a sister policy organization. In addition, if the GNSO found that there were considerable implications that existed at the root server level or the DNS level that had strong implications for the DNSO policy recommendations, it certainly could behoove the policy council to make a request or a proposal that would then lead ICANN to send a liaison statement or a request to a relevant standards entity such as the IETF.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So
let me just make one other comment about out of the scope of ICANN. When I helped found ICANN, working very closely with Larry Landweber and Mike Roberts and John Postel and others, had a very narrow understanding of the areas that we would need to address within ICANN. In the 11 years I've been heavily involved in this space, and with the evolution of the importance of the DNS underpinning communications and commerce, I would say we need to. There are clearly going to be things that are easy to identify as within the scope, and things that are easy to identify as out of scope, but having direct impact on the on ICANN. That doesn't mean that the policy will be developed within ICANN, but it may mean that there needs to be liaison activities. And I might just use as an illustration the role of trying to advance the emergence of IDNA.
So just to ask a clarifying question, there could be something that the GNSO may want to do, like make a call on another group to develop policy, but would that necessarily be something that would have to go through a PDP before the GNSO council makes that recommendation? Because remember, all we're talking about is launching of the more formal process to develop policy itself.
Right. Yeah, so Jeff, that was why I wanted to park that topic of what else could be called for besides the PDP, because while it might not need to go through a full PDP, it should not be done superficially or without thought.
Okay. So let me, Alan has got his hand raised.
Yeah, a very short one. I'm agreeing with what Marilyn said, and we want to be careful not to forbid a policy development process, even if it may be partially out of scope, because the policy it develops may be a recommendation to the board to do something, whether it's interact with another group or renegotiate what ICANN's mandate is, because the world has changed around us. I don't think we're going to see many of these, but I see no reason to prescribe it and forbid it.
So, if I'm just trying to understand, then, in your view, then, if it's out of scope of GNSO or out of scope of ICANN, if that's what the council determines, then
if
a higher threshold will apply no matter what.
If that's what staff determines currently.
Right. So staff determines, look, I'm trying to make up an absurd example, but I'm sure every absurd example you can find some something it relates to. But let's, I can't even think of one.
I tried ITV9 and Marilyn came up with reasons why it wasn't absurd. So.
Right. Like
scary, isn't it?
Like I could throw in something like, let's say someone wants a policy on the Internet being used for defamatory purposes, and...
Jeff,
Marilyn can find something. So.
I can. I do think it's out of scope for us to be involved in protecting kids online.
Okay. So if, let's say, so the council then says it's there's some proposed measure that someone wants to study protecting kids online. Council recommends, look, that's out of the scope. I mean, sorry, staff recommends that that's out of the scope of ICANN completely. Marilyn, still council can override that.
With a sufficient vote.
Right, and so, you know, what I would say is the rationale to override it might be that the unique indicators are being maliciously used and exploited. So the topic of protecting kids online is actually not the correct topic, but there may be a functional implication that council would say, look, you know, we're not actually studying protecting kids online. We are looking at how unique indicators, in this case, domain names, are being maliciously used and exploited.
Yeah. Remember,
so you've added, though, let me just to clarify, and then I'm going to go to Bertrand. You've added actually another element that if counsel determines it's outside the scope of ICANN, I'm sorry, general counsel, or staff determines it's out of the scope of ICANN, you've just added, Marilyn, that counsel could, what you said is counsel wouldn't just then vote with the higher threshold. It would be your interpretation that CNSO counsel would then try to find an element of that within scope and use that to override.
I actually assumed from the beginning that the reason the GNSO Policy Council was looking at it was because they discerned the element of rationality and responsibility, but it, that, you know, it may have been, and I think we went through this, Jeff, in PDP06. There was a lot of talking past each other, even within the working group. So, you know, I would assume the reason that GNSO Policy Council is even considering a topic is that some members of the council or the community have discerned what the relationship is. But if it, you know, so there may be this narrowing of, you know, and I'm not suggesting they're looking for that element. I'm assuming that element was there in the beginning but wasn't well articulated.
Okay, let me go to Bertrand, who has his hand up, and then Liz, is your hand still up, or is it that from the, oh, I'm sorry, your hand's up for another subject, right?
I can put it down, though, and you can just hold the thought.
If you could, that would help me out.
Sure.
Thanks. Bertrand?
Yeah, just one element to say that the discussion right now is very interesting because it points to one ambiguity in the term policy. We are using the same word for three, at least, I'm sure there are others, at least three different types of outcomes. One is consensus policies, which are very clearly defined as altering the picket fence type of provisions in the regimes applicable to individual or all GTLDs. That's one. The second one is the full policy type of thing, like the policy for new GTLDs, which is a very long process with a lot of consequences and many iterations. And the third one would be what we've been describing informally as recommendations, which is something that is not necessarily binding, but that could be a message from the GNSO to other actors in a somewhat formal manner, but that wouldn't have enforceability capacity. I think the process that we are designing here should be able to accommodate the different aspects, or we have to make clear that we create three different types of threads, and I don't think we're there yet. So the objective, as we've always said, is to find a flexibility to make sure that when we get into the policy development process per se, after the preparation phase we're discussing now, that we exactly know what kind of outcome we're trying to produce. And this is why in the end of the preparatory phase, I was suggesting that we have a staff recommendation that says policy is needed and this is the type of policy that we should produce, a general policy or a picket fence consensus policy or a recommendation, and to have a clear description at the end of the preparatory phase on the exact issues that are supposed to be addressed. Is it to identify a solution to a very concrete problem? Is it to highlight the broad dimensions of something that is the introduction of new GTLDs, for instance, and so on? But it's important to understand that we're covering at least three dimensions.
Okay, I'm sorry, just to clarify, I got, just to restate the three, I have consensus policies, recommendations by GNSO to other actors. What was the third one?
And the third one is the full policy, typically the new GTLD opening up of the space.
Okay. Okay, let me go to Alan.
With regard to Bertrand's last statement, we need to be just a little bit careful. I'm currently the front man on what might be a PDP, which, if it goes ahead, is likely to have all three types of outcomes. So one can mix and match these kind of things. With regard to non-consensus policy, the GNSO Council has no ability to make it binding, but if it's a recommendation for staff to do something and the board approves it, it becomes binding. So some things become binding along the way, regardless of whether they're in GNSO scope or not, just by nature of the process that follows things. And lastly, when we're talking about going against recommendation of council and whether it's in GNSO scope or not, or for that matter, ICANN scope, ICANN talks about capture a lot. We certainly also have to worry about what if we disagree with council? What if, council is not legal counsel is not infallible, and if the GNSO council disagrees, then yes, it's a higher threshold. A lot more of us have to disagree. But nevertheless, that we shouldn't stop something from going ahead just because legal counsel didn't agree with it.
Okay. Anybody else's comments on this subject? All right. I want to go to, I know Liz has another comment on an aspect that we haven't touched.
Well, this actually relates to the little discussion we had about whether the review of the scope at this juncture should be kind of the general counsel or the staff, and Margie had suggested maybe the staff, and Marilyn made some very good points about the general counsel's role and wanting to make sure that if that review was required, that it was going to be up front so that you don't have the concern of, and I'm paraphrasing, Mayor, feel free to edit my characterization, but you don't want a situation where there's a U-turn or later on or a different understanding that's created. And I think what we were suggesting, because I appreciate that very much, you don't want that. And so the obligation would be on the staff to make sure that what we came back with was the overall staff opinion, including the general counsel. It's just that as an internal matter, being so specific about the general counsel's review, when in fact, there might be more than just the general counsel's review that gets conducted. We want the flexibility, I think, to conduct the review and sort of own the process as a staff function, but the need to be able to rely on the staff recommendation and analysis and conclusion at that point would be the same. We'd want to give the same weight to the staff recommendation as it would be to the general counsel. So I just wanted to recognize what Marilyn, I think your point is, and say that we weren't suggesting that then the second review could undermine the first review in some way, but rather that the two would, in a sense, have a synonymous weight.
So just to clarify, Liz, then you wouldn't foresee a situation where the staff would come out with a recommendation and later on general counsel would disagree with that.
No, I think that would be a real problem, and I think Marilyn's point is extremely well taken. Now, I appreciate some other aspect of the discussion that we were also having in this context, which is that as you delve into an issue more deeply, sometimes the policy question morphs. The scope issue might start out being, could we do such and such because our understanding of an issue is at, a sort of more initial or nascent level, and then as a working group progresses, there may be a shift in terms of what the policy question or issue becomes. Maybe we should, the question becomes, should we impose that on, say, registrars and registries, where you would need, again, another staff review on the second question, as the thinking evolves. But again, every time there's a staff review or a staff analysis, the community would need to rely on that staff analysis the way you're relying today on a general counsel. That's at least what our suggestion would be to clarify where we were coming from on that, because I really recognize the concern that Marilyn's raising and would not want that to happen.
Do I need to, Jeff, if I might clarify, Liz, I need to think more about this and see what this looks like in writing, because I have worked in complex organizations for most of my life, and I want to ensure that the GNSO Council has the ability to disagree with a ruling and to seek an additional opinion.
Sorry. So Marilyn, if you could do that and then let us know your thoughts on the email list.
And let me just say very quickly that that might be an additional thing or step or mechanism that might need to be built in regardless, because I'm not real sure that you have that today.
Actually, we did. We got a ruling from the General Counsel that we did not agree with. The policy staff was not in a position to, and the council did not accept the decision of the General Counsel. I don't want to, you know, I think there was an issue of lack of clarity, but the point was the council did not agree with the interpretation, and they had the ability to launch a work process. I don't want to go into the details of whether they should have been able to or not, but, you know, we can't, in a bottom-up environment, we have to build in appropriate safeguards and the ability to ask for a second opinion.
Right, and I think that's a good idea, personally. And I wouldn't expect the council to necessarily agree with the opinion or even be monolithic in its view of an opinion. So I don't see that as any... I think that's a valid point in addition that this group could give some further thought to. So very good point from staff's perspective.
Okay. So before, because we're only scheduled for an hour and a half and we're almost done, I think we've made good progress, and as I scrolled through the list of all the 11 items, I think we touched on each and every one of them. Even though it seems like we're only stuck on number two, we actually covered all of the other items in our discussions. So I think, you know, the first item is for staff to and myself to draft a note to this call and circulate it as to where we think we're cutting out on some of these items and to, you know, get more discussion going on the email list. I do want to say that for the next call, I think we should start with talking about timelines, because that's one thing we've kind of avoided talking about, all of us understanding that there needs to be flexibility, but, you know, we all understand that the timelines do need to be built in, otherwise things can drag on forever, and it's been an extremely controversial subject, and one that we all agree, I think, that the timelines in the current PDP aren't necessarily the most realistic to achieve. So I do want to put that on the agenda to talk about on the next call as one of the first items. So if you all can give some thought after we distribute the notes as to what timelines you would recommend putting to each of these and also mechanisms to extend the timelines, frankly, which I think came up once or twice on this call. I know Bertrand had said that if the council believes more information is needed before we can launch a full PDP, do you add some more time? Things like that. So if people can get started thinking about those types of issues, I think that's a good place to kick off on the next call before we jump into the next full item. I see Alan has his hand up.
Actually, that was the previous hand, but I do have a very brief comment. The document I sent around a week or so ago does have some ramblings about timelines in them. I'm probably going to redo it again now that we've had this discussion, but there are some thoughts about timelines, both on the issues report and the decision to launch a BDP.
Okay, and then Bertrand?
Yeah, likewise, the document I circulated suggested that we have two timelines. One that is the existing 15 days for the initial brief issue paper, like the one that starts the thing, and a time to be determined for the issuing of the staff recommendation. It can be an additional 15 days or it can be a month, because we have to take into account what is the actual practice. And of course, nothing prevents going faster, but the idea is that it is up to the council in between to potentially extend this by requesting additional reports or studies if needed.
Okay, great. So we'll look at those documents and anybody else with thoughts on it. So I have for the next call to invite, the first thing is, sorry, I misspoke as far as order. The first thing we want to do is reach out to the W3C and the IETF, specifically Thomas Narten and Thomas Roessler, to talk a little bit about their process and procedures for raising an issue, creation of a issues report, all the things leading up to a working group, and then to go into the timelines of the items that we talked about on this call. And then the hope is that by the end of the next call is to finish out this first item A, at least enough to get a draft going of a paper that incorporates all of the suggestions and items that we've come up with on topic A. By the end of next by the end of the next call, we should be able to get to that stage where we can get that paper, so that the following call we can start on some of the other items B, C, and et cetera in the work plan. Anyone have any comments on that? Great. Well, I appreciate everyone participating and for showing up. And the next call is the same time next Thursday.
No, Jeff. Excuse me. This is Glenn. Thursday is a council call. Can we make it the 14th, please?
2 weeks. Can we make it May 14th?
Wait. May 14th is Thursday.
May 14th is Thursday. Yes. But next Thursday is the council call that is May 7th.
Oh, I see. So 2 weeks. Oh, okay.
Yes.
I'm going to be traveling on the 14th, but I think you may have to go ahead because the only day, yeah.
That week is also the... So I think it might need to stay the 14th because the beginning of the week is the IRT meeting. San Francisco, a couple of us are involved. And then I know the INTA meeting start in Seattle for a number of people on the right after that. So let's keep with the schedule if we can, Marilyn. And if you could send us any thoughts, if you can't make it, I hope you can. But if you can, if you could send us some thoughts on email.
Me too.
All right. The next call will be May 14th, which actually gives us more time to invite the other guests. But please, I know the discussions on the list have kind of slowed down. Let's try to keep it up and going because I think we have some good momentum here, and I think I'm happy with the progress that we've been making.
Thanks for a good call.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.